And welcome to Light Years. We are recording this Sunday, April 18th, around 10, 11 in the morning.
Sam, I had to watch it at like 1 a.m. just because I didn't get it live. But but we'll get into it with special guest Ethan Strauss. Before we get into that, you guys make sure, if you're subscribed to this podcast, or if you're not, make sure to subscribe, leave a review, rate 5 stars, and do all that fun stuff. We also have a Light Years Premium that you can subscribe to as well. $1.99 actually for the first month, $5 after that. I believe the last podcast we had a little trip down memory lane, Sam, with Warriors World and JRAM. So you guys check that out.
Light Years Podcast, recording this Sunday, 10 a.m., April 18th, after a fun but disappointing Warriors-Celtics game. I feel like that's the best way to describe this season. Fun but disappointing, the 2021 Golden State Warriors. We got a special guest today, Ethan Strauss. Ethan, how you doing, man?
I just took a sip of coffee when you asked me that question, so I'm a little delayed.
We're all ready to go.
I was looking for some sort of portmanteau of fun and disappointing, but I was struggling to come up with one that really works well. But that is the case. It is a high engagement season, adding up to, I don't know, sound and fury, signifying nothing, whatever the quote might be.
That's such a great way to put it. Highly engaged. Just, I've never had Warriors fans this angry, but it's almost kind of a good thing if you're covering the team, because you never have more passionate fans just yelling about nothing all day long.
Yeah. Yeah. I think Slater has been a tremendous air traffic controller for this particular season. And we appreciate it at The Athletic. I'm sure you guys appreciate it. The fans are in, even if everybody knows it's not exactly leading to a championship run.
Yeah, well, I mean, I was just thinking about this. This is like the first time in my lifetime the Warriors have had a generational player and a nothing burger of a season. Mm-hmm. Like, it's like the whatever you think of these players. It's like Kobe in the mid-00s, or like any of those like Iverson Sixer teams, where it was just like they had one guy and a bunch of whatever's going on. And you can go through history. There's a lot of teams like it.
Kobe in the mid-00s was, I think, a unique moment in NBA history and NBA fandom. And I don't think it's really remembered how odd it was. I went down there to watch Lakers Warriors during that run of Kobe's consecutive 40-point games. Coincidentally, there was a porn convention happening simultaneous with the game on the same premises, because I think the convention center is right, is right next to the stadium. So it was weird LA stuff all the way around. But what I distinctly remember is that whenever another Laker shot, the fans would boo, even if the shot went in. That to me was so strange, because what had happened is that the Lakers were defined by ultimate success. But then after Shaq left, they needed a new reason to puff their chest out, and it became all about Kobe scoring points. That became the golden calf for that particular era, and I think it served them well. It was a nice little bridge until they got championship relevant again. But I had never seen a fan base so involved in the individual accolades, specifically for scoring, of one particular player. I thought that was different, and I'd never seen it happen before.
I mean, that just makes me wonder how this season would feel if we had fans in the stadium. Like, a lot of what's going on with the Warriors is we're taking our cues from what we see online or what comments you get and everything, but we don't get the feel of in the arena. You don't get to hear the noise of how fans feel. Would they be exhilarated the way like OKC fans were with Westbrook? Would they be just disgusted that it's Steph and Draymond who can't make a layup, and Bazemore who can't make free throws? And I don't even know how you
Kelly Oubre, like you've got a battalion of just guys that people can get angry at. Brad Wanamaker was that guy. Like, I think you can argue whether these guys should be slandered or whatever, right? But it is what it is.
Yeah, I don't want to hijack your show, guys, but I do think that one of Sam's hotter takes was that it was the defense of Kelly Oubre, you know, to be so committed to the criticism of Kerr that it turns into a defense of Oubre. I mean,
let me explain that one. My comment is not that Kelly Oubre is a difference maker in the sense of he's going to take the team to another level. It's that he's just another, they just don't have enough bodies. They're That's true. When he's in the rotation than when he's not. Am I saying I want to pay $20 million for him next year? Of course not. I don't even know if he's worth his current contract, to be honest. You know, like he's one of those weird players where you're like, there's usefulness to the fact that you have the ideal physical profile of a wing. And, you know, when he's playing well, he can be disruptive. He can score efficiently in transition, that sort of stuff. But like, you know, he also has the downside, such as never passing the ball or not really being able to hit open shots with any sort of consistency that it, you know, I don't know what you do with him. I think the bigger thing is, why didn't they trade him? Because it seems to me they just want to let him walk and just kind of save money in that capacity.
That's wild.
But to me, it's, you know, it just comes down to like, he's another wing they can play. Like, I don't think he's seven times better than Bazemore, which is the contract difference, but he's seven times better than Nico Mannion.
Well, I experienced Sam's, sensitive as I am, I experienced Sam's tweets as a little bit of a shot, because it seemed to be in reaction to a Warriors plus minus conversation.
Maybe I didn't even hear it. So
we do love
you boys. Liar. Everybody listens to Warriors plus minus. They all know. Well, this is the problem with Twitter. This happens to me all the time, or used to. I don't really tweet anymore, but I would say something and somebody would receive it as about them. And it wasn't about them, but now you have to put out that fire. You've got to assure them that it's not about them. And you still think that deep down they suspect you're lying and it was really about them.
No, just to clarify that, like, I'm not going to start listing all the like ads, but like the Warriors Twitter fans I follow who every day are talking about the Warriors online we're just in a, thank God Oubre's not playing better without him. And I'm like, guys, this isn't a situation where like he's eating up minutes that, you know, Andre Iguodala can take, who's a better.
But it's aesthetically better though. I mean, they moved the ball around.
Might be Andre Iguodala, you know. I don't know.
Well, didn't Mark Jackson call him an excellent NBA player, I believe, which I enjoy him. I enjoy his work. I don't think he's going to be Andre, but look, you're right. They don't have enough bodies. They would benefit from having Kelly Oubre fall into action whenever, but it just seems to be this awkward fit where he wants more shots and wants more minutes and gets more minutes because of the political situation of how much capital they have spent on him, then is helpful for the team. So that's the dynamic. It's not just purely about him. It's also about how he's used. It's also about how he wants to be used. He doesn't seem to really want to be in the supplementary role. He has said as much. So that's really what the awkward fit is. And I just on an aesthetic level, I prefer it when he is not there stopping the ball, driving, not finding somebody. But maybe at this point, he is more useful to them now that Wiseman's out, because that was really the aesthetic problem, was how they were playing when both those guys were in and those guys would make a pass every 10 games, basically.
Yeah. Combined one assist per three games.
I guess then why is he on the team? You know, then that becomes a thing. It's like, if they've been shopping him for weeks before the trade deadline, then why is he on the team?
Maybe a dearth of takers, you know, maybe you can't get anything.
I guess
if you think you're better,
any
without
taker
him,
would be. Yeah, if you think
you might as well, you know? You might as well take that Dinwiddie offer and hope you can.
Or Danny
him.
Green, or if they leak the Danny Green, whoever leaked the Danny Green, doesn't matter. But
I'm not buying that Daryl Morey was willing to trade the prototypical 3-and-D wing for Kelly Oubre. That sounds anything, more like, right? I'll take him if you give me the Wolves pick type of thing. I want to say one last Oubre thing who I didn't really want to say.
No, I'm curious. Why is he on the team then? Why is he on the team?
He did play his best basketball when Wiseman and Looney were out and they played small ball.
No. Why? Yeah. If he's not, if he wants to play and he shouldn't be playing, why is he on the team? And they're only playing him because they paid this much money for him, right? And they know that they're better without him. I don't understand that.
Yeah, I think I look at it more. I look at it more towards the future than about this season. This season, as we have said, they are not winning a championship. I just don't see him fitting on next season's team. And with Clay coming back, Clay, who's a bit of a, in a good way, a bit of a chucker. I don't.
Yeah, but when he chucks, it goes in. So
it goes in. It goes in. I just don't see that fit. I don't see that fit of trying to get these guys who all want to eat. You're talking about Wiseman.
Oh, I agree with
Clay.
You.
It just does not, it doesn't really compute. I will give them the credit for trying it. There was a theory of the case, right? We bring this guy in. The Suns, they don't do a great job with guys. The Wizards, they don't do a great job with guys. Maybe we turn him into an all-star. Maybe we show him the light of how passing and sharing his carrot is good. Didn't really happen. You know, there was enough of a test run for it. Maybe he flourishes elsewhere, but I just do not see the long-term fit here.
And that's kind of my, because I agree with both of you. I don't think he's a long-term fit for this team. You could talk me into him having a role if he was like the only guy on the roster who was doing that. Like, there's always a place for a guy who can come in and just kind of like change the tone with aggressiveness in one capacity or another. The problem is they have like six of those guys right now. Like Wiseman's kind of that way. Obviously, you know, he's a rookie, so it's different.
Yeah,
he's more in some level.
You're right.
Why?
They do have a bit of a scrappy team right now. They're a little scrappy, this team.
Even Wiggins, I mean, he tries to pass here and there, but I wouldn't exactly call him someone who's looking to move the ball first. You know, like I think it's more of a like they overcorrected in the opposite way of what they had last year.
I feel like they try to make it work with D'Lo, which I was like, oh, I'm all for this move. And then they realized that, this is awful. Got rid of his ass in the midseason. And then that's why I almost like kind of don't blame Oubre as much. Most of my kind of stuff has been like, well, it's, you can just see he's not a good fit. He's not smart enough. So you either kind of change the way you play sort of for him, or you just get rid of the guy like you did with D'Lo. They did win the D'Lo trade, at least.
They did win that trade. I think that the results are in. That trade's a win. Flat out.
Honestly, even without the pick,
even without the pick, right?
You could probably call it a win. You're swapping contracts, and one of the players is more productive than the other.
Crazy. Yeah. Yeah.
So
we felt like they should have gotten another pick. That's at the time. I was like, it'd been nice if they, it felt like they could have gotten another pick, and obviously
or unprotected, which always sounds dirty. You go to a draft unprotected.
I guess my only thing with Oubre is, like you said, if you don't think he's a part for next year, and we all acknowledge this year is kind of, it is what it is. You know, Clay goes down, any ambitions of doing anything relevant go out the window. Just why wasn't he moved then? Because everything should be towards an eye towards next year. I actually have this on the rundown, but it's like they need to bring in like four or five different players in some capacity for next year. Like they should start kind of moving in that direction, right?
Maybe. I mean, Joe loves big wings. I know that much. I'm just speculating now. Now I'm just picturing him almost going into madness as the Warriors are no longer into contention. He's in an empty Chase Arena in one of those luxury suites. Maybe it's the Salesforce suite and trash is piling up in the Salesforce suite. And it's like a Citizen Kane situation. He's like, yes, blowing kisses at the crowd. I love it. Call him Bobby. Can't do it. Can't trade him. Can't do it.
Would you?
I don't know.
Hey, let me ask you this. Would you feel better about Oubre having a role on this team, assuming it, you know, was at a palatable contract figure? If they were to move Wiggins, let's say they decide move Wiggins and the Wolves pick for something substantial. I don't really even know what those two get you. I mean, apparently they get you D'Angelo Russell, but
if you get some more shooting and playmaking, and you don't have the redundancy of a Wiggins and an Uber. Yeah. I mean, I could be talked into it, but part of me is a little old timey. Part of me is a little Steve Kerr. Ironic, since I think Steve Kerr has actually given Oubre a lot of opportunity, but great. I look at Oubre and I go, yeah, this isn't the right way to play basketball. Yeah, I don't really love this. I don't love this on my hypothetical imaginary general manager team. This isn't the way forward, and it offends my sensibilities more than, say, Wiggins. And that's just my visceral reaction to the whole thing.
Do you think maybe it changes if he gets a long-term extension and he's not, you know, just viewing dollars and cents with every shot he takes?
It might. I mean, we've never known less about these guys from a media perspective, right? Because you do get a sense of things just from being in the locker room and also just talking, not just to the guys themselves, but off record, dudes will be pretty honest about, about that. That's what was so funny to bring it back to that internet controversy from a few weeks ago when Nate Duncan tweeted that Anthony Edwards, I guess the stat line, the poor stat line for that game,
1 for 7 or something.
When he had that, when he had that big dunk. The reason I was chuckling to myself as I watched all these people on NBA Twitter assail Nate for how dare he ruin this kid's moment. Ironically, then I keep saying ironically, but then signal boosting the ruining of it, making it more likely that Anthony Edwards would know about it. But what I thought was so funny about that was, if you were in an NBA locker room and you have an honest rapport with the players, they would be saying similar stuff to what Nate said in that tweet. They would go, yeah, great dunk. You guys talk a lot about it. You couldn't hit a shot all game, but you know, like NBA players are so sensitive to the amount of praise one of their teammates is getting, especially in a bad situation. And so it was so funny to me. It's not like in the real world, at the NBA level, with frank conversations in that locker room, that the players would be going, gee whiz, he's a young kid. It makes me so mad. Somebody made a, you know, tweet about how he played bad. I just love the Wolves, and I mean, just want nothing bad ever to be said about any of my teammates.
We could do a full podcast on like NBA Twitter going farther and far away from like the general reality of sports fans. Like sports fans. Sports fans care about who wins and loses. NBA Twitter just wants to praise everyone and be friends. Like, yeah. What are we doing here? You know, like it's
everyone gets a trophy.
There is something to it. I mean, let's be real. It's not crazy. This is a new dynamic where you are a little bit. I changed my tone on a lot of things because when I was starting out as a quasi media member, as a blogger at Warriors World, I would just tweet whatever about how the players were playing. And then one day I realized that they could actually see that and get mad about it. And that does change the dynamic. I think in the past you would just speak and have no reaction. And maybe there's a little bit of cowardice that you don't want the blowback from the players themselves, but I think there is maybe an understandable feeling of, hey, I don't want to make this guy feel bad.
Harrison
I just
Barnes
wanted to
didn't
talk.
Feel bad. Harrison Barnes didn't feel
or
bad.
It's just like,
yeah, Harrison did not feel great. David Lee did not feel great.
I was gonna say we had a bit of a poll of like, if someone were to report on the disconnect between Kerr and the Lakers in the front office, who would be the first person to report that? A lot of people did say your name, Ethan. A lot of people threw that out there. Yeah,
that's interesting.
Your thoughts?
It's a very interesting poll.
Interesting article, maybe.
Yeah, it's an interesting poll. It's very, very, very interesting. I'm honored that anybody would think of me in any sort of reporting context. I think
people are thinking like, if there's one person to kind of throw it out there, not want to and not be scared of pissing people off, it may be you. There's a history, you know.
Scared of pissing people off. I'm scared of pissing people off. I wish that I had the attitude of I don't care at all, but I do it anyway. Like, that's what I do. I'm on the diving board. I look down at the water. I don't look down at the water and think, oh, what a nice day. I'm just going to hop off. I go, a little bit scared, and I just do it. That's what I do. That's how I handle things.
It is always kind of funny the first time you realize your tweets are not you talking to your buddies in a sports bar, though. That's like always the thing. It's like you're very aware of the fact that this is public, but as you're doing it, you're just talking as if it's like me and Andy BSing about a game. And then someone direct messages you who you didn't want to see it. And then you're like, ha, ha, ha.
Yeah. Well, this is awkward. But I don't think Andy's changed his tweets at all. There is no,
he's gone the opposite way. Actually, he's leaned in harder into it. You either have to pull all the way back or go into overdrive. You can't live in the middle.
The inside voice has merged with the outside voice and become the singularity. And I think that's why he's one of the most compelling tweeters in NBA Twitter for that reason. You're not going to get that from anybody else.
You know, if you know somebody's looking at it, you might as well say, well, I might just tweet directly to that person. I might as well do that all season long and see what happens.
Yeah, it's also, it's just strange. It's a strange period of time in sports where we are so disconnected and only talking to each other through the internet. All these Zoom sessions that they do the press conferences on, it's just so digital. I do miss physical locations where things would happen. That is something that I miss, and hopefully we can get back to.
I mean, reading body language is a thing that you can't really do on Zoom. So it's just kind of like you can notice if someone is
a little bit
maybe more upset that they're letting on.
I know when Steph's pissed because he does little laughs between his words. He does that little it's funny. It's funny. Yeah.
But you've been in scrums with him for a decade. So you can translate it to Zoom. If it's maybe like Jordan Poole, who you haven't spent as much time with, do you really know the idiosyncrasies and the little tendencies?
Nope. Well, a little bit. I got a little sense of Poole. Poole has got some cockiness to him, which good. I think it's for a score. That's good. I remember. I mean, Poole. This is a memory of mine, and I don't think it factors at all into Tim's reporting. But I remember Poole nearly bumping into Kawakami as he was walking to his locker and then kind of muttering angrily at Tim. And I'm just looking like, dude, do you know this guy's like the most prominent media member in the, in the area, and you're in the G League? I mean, this is okay. But he has played his way, I think, into the rotation and been at least one of the players I enjoy watching the most. I'm always interested in Poole's minutes when he's in there, and very much so in what is he going to be. Is he going to be rotation player? Is he going to be something more than that? But yeah, I've got a sense of the Poole personality, but somebody like Oubre, I've never met Oubre in my life.
Right. That's probably a better example. Someone who literally came to the team during the pandemic. So yeah.
Brad Wanamaker came and went, never met him. They had a whole Warriors run.
Gonna have to bring him back. That's the only solution.
I was gonna say somewhat of a Warriors run. Maybe we could talk. Maybe Sam, where are we going? Steph? We could talk.
Yeah, Steph, let's do Steph for a little bit here. That was gonna be the we're burying the lead here. Steph had 10 straight games of over 30 points.
Jeez.
He's now averaging 31 points per game on the season. He basically identical to his unanimous MVP year. And just from a statistical individual output point, I think it's tying people in a knot because they're having a hard time understanding how this player can be as good as that player. Mm-hmm. And one of them was the single greatest regular season of all time, just from a team perspective. And this team is, I mean, they're winning at like a high 40 win pace. When Steph's in the lineup, they're probably going to end around 500 because he misses games.
Yep.
But it's just like a decidedly mediocre team that he's dragging from total garbage to mediocrity.
I mean, I think probably should be in the MVP conversation, though that's not what we do. Except if you average a triple double, then I guess we do that maybe. But I don't know. He's been incredible and has taken care of his body. During the pandemic, pause is wearing a butt pad and seemingly,
which is hilarious, by the way. It's because it's so obvious.
it is hilarious. He is having this incredible run while wearing a butt pad. It does remind a little bit of Kobe Bryant, how Kobe's body would be breaking when the Lakers were not so good, and he would find ways to shoot with a broken finger and everything else. It's difficult to even really give good context for it. I think during the early run with Steph, a lot of it was numerical because he was doing things that nobody else had done before. So at least when I was a beat writer back in the day, it was, he has made X amount behind 25 feet, blah, 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 blah. But the thing with Steph is you really need the least amount of help to enjoy it. You just watch it. And the shot is beautiful. And
the creativity, the way he gets some of them are just wild. Like the lefty and one he had yesterday was just silly.
Yeah, it was fantastic. And he seems a little conscienceless in this setting, which makes it even more enjoyable. I don't have anything smart to say about it other than you hope that they can keep him preserved enough while he's entertaining everybody. I mean, this is... One of the, I mean, that game was great, by the way. That was a great game. And the NBA has not had a lot of great games. It was great in part because both teams really wanted to win it. You can't say that every night. It's not the case when, say, there the was Nets a level or the Clippers of desperation.
The Nets versus Clippers might be the
yeah. I mean, who's even playing the Nets versus Clippers?
The low point or the high point.
Sounds good on paper, and then it's Terrence Mann versus Landry Shamet.
And then you actually, yeah. And well, it's also not that fun to watch. I mean, the Clippers objectives just aren't fun. The Nets, I think, are fun when they have guys because they're new, but
like, yeah,
that style of basketball.
Yeah, you don't have that. And so that was an ABC primetime game where both teams badly wanted to win. There was atmosphere. It was back and forth and just incredibly entertaining. Tatum's so much fun to watch too. So that was awesome. And the whole time, it's an oddly announced game, I would say, just because I hadn't really sat down and listened to one of the ABC games in a while. And a lot of it is Mark Jackson and Jeff Van Gundy telling you they're having the sorts of meta conversations that we have on a podcast where we're saying that this guy's underrated or
podcast.
Yeah, they're doing a podcast.
2 hour, 2.5 hour. Yeah.
Mike Breen is trying to announce the game and Van Gundy and Mark Jackson are doing a podcast where they're talking about who's been underrated or unappreciated and 90% straw man arguments that don't correlate at all to what the actual conversation happening outside that announcing is very odd. I wish I could remember some of the examples of it. But they are very pro Steph. They were very pro Steph in that particular broadcast. Mark Jackson, not all the time, but in that broadcast, Steph propaganda. I think Warriors fans would have probably probably enjoyed it.
Mark Jackson sensing that the fans are turning on Steve Kerr sees his opportunity to pack it. Come back now.
That's good. I do think, because there's two ways I want to take this, Ethan. I did read your article about the ratings. I want to go there a little bit, not right now, but I see the Steph Kobe stuff is I think pretty good. The similarities are pretty clear there. In that Kobe got a lot of criticism, I think throughout his career. Maybe some of it justified, maybe some of it is not. I think a little bit with Steph, but really, I think the on the floor stuff is the best part right now, or the most similar part is that there has to be some way. You know, Kobe got Gasol and he got his guys and he won two more titles, right? Steph is also at three titles, and I don't know if they're getting a Gasol. Actually, they could get Marc Gasol, but they do need
not
to figure
quite
out
the same. Yeah.
They do need to figure out who else to get him moving forward to get those the next titles. And I'm curious your thoughts around that. Like, who can they? What can they do? Because he is Kobe right now in the season where he had to drag himself. And what did Kobe have?
Smush Wanamaker, Smush Mannion.
Yeah,
Smush like Wanamaker. You might have to wait for this playoff sequence to pry someone loose from a situation, because that is where some of the angst can come from of failure again. Oh, the Bucks again, if it goes that way, because as much as we talk about Bradley Beal, but A, he hasn't really given much indication that he wants to leave, and B, that's a suboptimal fit. I mean, maybe you do it because he's so good, but you have a lot of redundancy and duplication when you're going, that's funny. I'm saying redundancy and duplication. I'm being redundant about saying redundant, but you've got Clay, Steph, and Bradley Beal, to say nothing about the all-time great Jordan Poole, who maybe in a deal like that, he's traded. I don't know, but that's not the perfect fit that they need. So it just seems like the guy they would want to trade their young picks for might not be even available, even if that's the way to go. And you need to wait for that opportunity to open up.
This kind of takes me to, by the way, that is my biggest thing with Oubre, by the way. It's not that I think he's a good fit. It's that they just don't have a lot of NBA players on the roster and they don't have avenues to get him. So like just saying like, just let him walk. Like, okay, use a vet minimum to bring in another Bazemore. Have you really improved the roster? You know, you've improved the luxury tax. That's for sure. But they are kind of stuck in terms of avenues to add players because of the contracts they have.
They are, but the NBA might be a little bit watered down to the degree that if Clay comes back and he's the Clay of old, maybe you're not that far away. You're not going to be favored, but maybe you get one of those Spurs titles where the Spurs were kind of whatever for that season and maybe in the 50 something win range. And then they just outlasted everybody or they came together and played well. You could have that pathway like that. That is a potential pathway where you're not favored, but maybe you're within striking distance of contention if Clay is good enough.
I think I'd agree with that. The Nets look like that team that even more so than.
But
the
Lakers. I will also say if I had to bet on one team not lasting for multiple years, just by nature of the personality.
Correct. I mean,
you got your point guard taking PTO whenever he sees a headline he doesn't like. You know, it's kind of.
He really is the one player where they say, we never know when this guy's going to show up, and they always mean it metaphorically, but they actually, in Kyrie's case, mean it literally. We literally don't know.
He may actually never, you know, not respond to a text and actually show up and score 55 points. Like, that's not out of the realm of possibilities, which is amazing and probably also just gives great hairs to everyone else.
Maybe not great for the game. Maybe not great for the game.
No,
maybe not. Maybe not. If you want to
take it to the Steph Kobe comparison, that the biggest reason the comparison's there is because it didn't matter who's on their team. You knew they were going to give you a show worth watching pretty much every night. And sometimes that show was 6 for 25 from the field, but it was an honest 6 for 25. There was an effort there. So
the Mad Dog had some rant about it when he looked at the injury list. And I think he didn't choose the right opportunity because it was a game in which maybe KD missed it. And KD is coming off this devastating injury.
And James Harden's before. Actually hurt. And
Yeah. So it wasn't maybe the correct opportunity, but it was a kind of Joe sports fan rant of how people off of NBA Twitter regard these things, which is not saying that, oh, I think it's great that these guys play whenever they feel like it and act like the regular season doesn't matter. That's not a normative take. That's not a normal take. It is right. Within our community, which is the community that has the platform to talk about the games, but it is not, I think, broadly felt.
Oh, you're asking people for time investment. So if they feel like the product they're investing in is not invested, it's not very complicated. You don't go to a restaurant where the waiter just like doesn't come by your table. You know, it's like that kind of thing.
Well, the problem is,
or sometimes you do maybe.
It's a kind of revealed preference and it's revealed truth about the meaning of the regular season. And I think it's been happening. Maybe it started with the Spurs and their load management, but then it was ratcheted up. I do think that there was a bit of a turning point with the Cavs winning the championship in 2016 because the Warriors had put together the greatest regular season of all time. The Cavs had kind of saved themselves and paced themselves. And when they won it, it didn't really matter to a lot of people. And it, if anything, just served as even greater humiliation that the Warriors had achieved so much that regular season. And I think people do learn the lesson of you're going to look like a sucker acting like these games matter. The problem is those games kind of are a big deal for the NBA product. And a lot of people in our sphere can say, okay, well, whatever, regular season, it's all about the playoffs. If fans aren't engaged in your regular season, they are actually less likely to come around for the playoffs too. Like they have developed new habits now. They have started caring about different things now. They're not going to come back for the postseason. I mean, the interest in the regular season and the postseason are highly correlated.
Yeah, you're turning yourself into hockey or baseball, neither of which are models I would advise as the way you want your sport to go, where it's like, you know, the Bay Area is heavily engaged because Steph Curry is once every, you know, 20 years you see a player like that cool on one of your local teams, but like other markets, probably not. And nationally, I don't think Warrior fans give a flying whatever about what's going on. Like when the Nets play the Lakers at this point, right? Like it's not drawing the same way. Like when you and I were kids, if the Knicks and Bulls played, neither were my team, but I had to see it.
Oh yeah. I remember on the West Coast, how you might even wake up early to see one of those games, or maybe not early, but they would have that football feel, that football feel of I'm waking up, I'm eating my breakfast, and it's NBA and NBC, Knicks, Pacers, Yeah, that's gone. That's out of here. I think that's been killed off by a variety of things, but especially load management. And now the NBA is finding a way forward without it.
I think also you say Knicks Pacers. You don't say Reggie Miller versus X or X versus X. And today,
it's implied, but yes.
When they market the game, though, I think part of that is, at least interesting to me, is that they'll say it's Luka versus Giannis.
Yeah.
It's not Bucks versus Mavs. Or
They're not building. They're not trying to build the brand of the team.
Which I don't know if that's right or not, but I just find that interesting.
I think it... I don't know if it's right. I think it does have a cost to it, is what I would say. I don't know if it's on balance right, but I do think that there's a cost when you try to make the teams. The NBA has always been in this different position where it almost doesn't have a history, or it acts like it doesn't. And these other sports are very invested in the NFL, especially, is just all about their history and NFL films and the trumpets and the slow motion. The NBA acts like it just arrived here today. And I do think that that can become a bit of an issue. And so with that, it's all about marketing today's player who's right in front of you. And it's not about how this team has some rich or grand tradition. And I do think that that's become a problem as time has moved on. And, I just don't see many people talking about it, outside of Clay Travis or somebody who doesn't appear to like the NBA very much or wants it kind of to validate, his worldview. And yep. I think that there's overlap between his worldview and the truth in some ways, as far as some.
That's the other problem. Like pointing out any of the NBA's flaws then aligns you with people you don't want to be aligned with. So it's better to just say nothing.
It's become a neurotic culture war. I mean, I was reading some Sports Illustrated riff on it about how dishonest people have tried to make it that the NBA has repelled people by being woke, and it's just opinion. It was so defensive, the article I was reading. It was so defensive. It wasn't actually critically analyzing, okay, well, is a cohort repelled by this, or is it this other thing, or is it... It's just protect the NBA at all costs. It's the people I don't like are attacking the NBA. The people I do like are pro NBA, but not enough to actually watch it, apparently, if we look at the numbers. But they're pro NBA. And that is what is guiding this entire conversation. It's not reality. And I get frustrated with it sometimes. I'm a sports TV nerd, so I like riffing on it. I know some people don't like to hear it, and some people don't like to read about it, but the numbers do great. So I don't know. I'm just gonna keep on going with it.
Palace intrigue always sells.
Yeah,
it's just one version of it. It's the other side of the coin where we love to hear about the drama in the locker room.
Yeah. It's also a little frustrating because the league, frankly, is so dishonest about it. And I think are given a pass for it in a way.
Found that fascinating, by the way, if you could talk about that.
Yeah, they shouldn't be given a pass for this. They, at the beginning of the season, they started pumping out all these stories about how ratings were way, way up. And the reason, and I'm trying to, it's the best way I can explain this. The trick they did was this. The season started, as we remember, at a different time. It started later. So what the NBA did, it compared their segment of the season that had opening week and the Christmas Day games against last season segment of the season that had no Christmas Day games. And if you know how the NBA works with their TV, the Christmas Day games are the most watched games of the regular season by far.
Family. Makes sense.
Yeah, they've done a good job. Congrats to them. They've successfully branded Christmas over the last decade or so. 15 years, really. But so basically, I would say the analogy would be this. It's like if the NFL started the Super Bowl a month earlier and then turned around and said, the playoff ratings in January are way, way up. They're way, way up because they had the Super Bowl in January instead of February. That's what the NBA did. All these people ran with it. All these people at respectable media publications ran with it. Even though it was clear that the Christmas Day ratings were way down. Oh, hi, buddy.
Oh, that's awesome.
You want to take your shoes off? Mommy will help you with that.
He's in the middle of thrashing the NBA.
Mommy will help with that. Hey, buddy.
Even your own son's tired of your ratings rants. That's
even him. Even him.
We're leaving that.
He's
in.
Like, I'm Jen, whatever's after Z and Y and everything.
Oh, what? The, yeah. What,
yeah, what is we, after? Yeah.
What are we it? Branding post Gen Z?
Post Gen Z. Just post Gen Z. Ethan's great. While he does that, I do find that wild. I don't know what to think about that. I don't know what to say about it. I read it and all I did was laugh. Like I was just, I don't know if
it's stupid. I had a friend say to me, I'd be doing the same thing because they're trying to get a new TV contract. And my friend has a podcast and I was saying, no, you wouldn't. Who doesn't? You wouldn't be on your podcast saying I get 400,000 downloads a month and just saying that on your podcast, hoping people run with it. That's weird behavior that is going to get found out by somebody trying to really look through the numbers. And it's going to be a bigger headline because now I don't know what the ratings are going to be for TNT and ESPN, but for ABC, they're down. And so after presenting to the public that they're way, way up on the basis of ABC ratings on Christmas. No, they're down this season. I don't know what they're going to end at, but they're down. By the way, totally excusable for them to be down. This crazy pandemic season has resulted in nearly every sport taking a hit. Everybody gets that. Everybody understands that. I'm not crushing them for it being down this season, but the problem is that you've now lied and then created a bigger revelation after you lied to everybody. And it just seems to be bizarre behavior for a league that should be looking into how to improve itself and how to get more traction as opposed to let's lie to everybody and hope nobody notices.
I guess the impact would be the question that I have. It would be what, so then what happens? Do they lose money? Is there a TV deal that gets scrapped? CBA? People lose jobs.
And I guess, lockout.
Yeah, I guess what?
Well, the TV deal will go up for a variety of reasons. The next TV deal will be bigger than the last one that they signed in 2014, 2015, I think anyway. And one of the reasons is actually just that we're going to have inflation in the economy. So like money's not going to be worth as much. So the sticker shock amount goes up, but it's also that in the streaming world, all these megacorps want to have differentiated products and be the company that has all the differentiated products. So they'll overpay to try to create some kind of monopoly. And so that is good for these sports leagues and I think has helped them get some good deals. So the NBA, I think, its TV deal will go up. It won't be anything near what they could have gotten if they were actually growing. I mean, but they're all going to get rich. They're all going to stay rich. And for that reason, there's just not so much pressure beyond pride, I think, for them to actually fix these issues that might aggravate us.
Yeah. I mean, it starts with actually acknowledging that it's probably not a good thing that every relevant player sits 20 plus games a year and what that does. But
well, to be fair to them, don't you think the play-in tournament was an attempt to try to fix that?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like we're getting back to conversations we had like a decade ago, literally. Like the solution is shorten the season, make the games matter more, play like 55 games or something like that, where it's like college basketball in the sense of teams care about the regular season games because it affects their ability to get into the tournament, right? Like, I mean, there's going to be a certain number of like no-show games. That's just the way sports works. But like you kind of want the intensity you got in the Warriors Celtics last night to be more on the regular than like, oh wow, we actually got a game where people tried, you know?
Yeah. I think that's always been the solution. Is to just realize that the season's over long. And it's so funny because they want to learn all these lessons from the NFL and they learn the wrong lessons. They go, gee, what's making the NFL popular? Do you think that it's, a scarcity of games on a regular schedule so everybody knows when the games are? No, couldn't be that. It's replay review. Everybody knows it's long replay reviews. That is why that's the secret sauce of the NFL. That's why they dominate. That's why
I have an Ed Hockley jersey. Exactly.
Yeah. That's the thing. That's what we got to do. That's the idea that we have to steal. And there just is an unwillingness to take the pain, to take the risk. And people go, owners wouldn't want fewer games because it's less money. It's not less money. It's more risk. That's what it is. It's more risk that you would have the fewer games and get the same viewership, right? But we have an example historically of fewer games, just crazy great viewership. And that was the 2011 lockout. You know, people forget the 2011 lockout. It looked like there might not be a season. There was no real ability to even promote and hype the season to people. They had all the bad PR of owners and players feuding, something that killed baseball for a long time, by the way. And guess what? It was the most watched season since Michael Jordan, because I believe in part there were fewer games, and that made the individual games more meaningful. We also have fewer games this season, but there are a lot of other factors depressing viewership. So I think that's an example of how if you do shorten the season, you'll make it up more so on the TV end of things. But as we've said before, these owners are getting paid no matter what. So why are they going to take the risk?
Yeah. I mean, and if you want to talk quality of game too, it's like, you hear people talk about how like there's better coaching if you watch EuroLeague or some of these other leagues, and there's more tactics.
Part of that's
because they have like 4 days of practice between games, and coaches actually game plan in a way that, like, I don't even think that can exist in an NBA season where your off days are more about treatment.
That's a great point.
Never thinking great point. About like,
well, that's the Australian league operates that way. And it's one of the reasons why it's fun to watch despite the lack of talent relatively. One stat though, now that I just thought about it on the viewership, because I think this stuff is hard for a lot of people to follow. They've got lives. They're not, you know, ratings nerds. But every ABC game in the 2011 lockout season, every single one was more watched than the most watched one this season. Like every single one.
That wasn't the year that they started the prime time, was it?
No, they started it far before that. And I'm excluding Christmas. Like, I'm talking about weekend ABC games. Like every weekend ABC game in the lockout season in 2011, all of them were more watched than all of the games this season on ABC. So, I'm trying to put that a little bit better. The least watched game in the lockout season was more watched than the most watched game this season. The least watched game was some April Thunder Bulls game that Derrick Rose didn't play in. So it was a nothing game. That was more watched than the premier ABC weekend showcase game of Celtics Lakers.
It's wild. That's absolutely wild. That's
yeah.
Sam's in no words. He's just sitting there shaking. Yeah. Like, to me, I'm thinking like if last night's game, like if they made last night's game matter twice as much. I mean, I'm sure a lot of people watch that game, but you think of that game as two games, it'd be insane. Each game matters a lot more. And right now, like honestly, I'm sitting here and some of the Warriors games that goes, I'm like, why do I even watch it? I'm only watching it because we have to do.
The Warriors are fun to watch. I think the Warriors are a little
fun to talk about. I think too. Yeah. They're fun to yell about.
I was talking about that with Nate Duncan recently about he was saying because he would know since he has to watch the entire. I find most fun to check up on right now. They're probably at the bottom of that list last season, but this season they're one of the most compelling. But there are only so many of those teams that you really want to check up on.
I want to use this as an opportunity to jump on one thing I wanted to talk about before we got on like a 25 minute ratings combo, yeah. Which was good. No problems with it. But I feel like everything with the Warriors season is coupled around the fact that the fans know they have something special with Steph, but they also know he's 33. And so there's anxiety of can they make one last push at it before, you know, he's proverbially done. He's done being one of those five or so best players in the league who can really impact a game. And so I wanted to get your thought on this because when everything's going well with the Warriors, it's just puff pieces. And there's no amount of like praise to various angles of the organization that can be too much. The fans just eat it all up. When things are stuck like this, I don't think the fans know where to go with it.
Oh,
and that's led to at times, everyone being mad at Steve Kerr, at times the front office, times Lacob, stuff like that. So,
I feel as though you guys, more so Andy, perhaps, have almost tried to counterbalance the softness of the media coverage that I think in some ways was born out of how this team was just unprecedentedly incredible. And then you fell into a routine. I certainly did. If we were looking for everybody, like, oh, Sammy Gelfand with the stats, and Chelsea Lane with the massages, and and it's very difficult to know what to do when the team is just average. And has a great player, but average.
And they're not.
What does that mean?
And they're not rebuilding. That's the interesting thing. Houston is a much more normal example. You know, they had their run with James Harden. They never got over the top, but Harden ass out. They know exactly what they're doing now. Now it's just race for ping pong balls.
Mm.
The Warriors are kind of in this weird win while developing phase, and for most of the year, it's felt like they've done neither. So. Mm. I guess I want to
say have done Poole.
I would say Poole developed. You got to give him Poole, but Wiseman in many ways regressed, and Wiseman is probably the more important. Just determines so much of everything is the question of Wiseman.
I want to ask you this: who's most responsible for this win while developing edict? Is this Bob, Steve, or Joe?
I think it's a Joe thing. I mean, they all probably got sick of what it was like last season.
Does he agree? Does he agree?
Get him on the pod.
Asher, do you want to say something?
He's got to have a take. Ask him if it's Steve Kerr's fault. Ask
him. Asher, do you want to say something about basketball?
Basketball.
You want to say hi?
Hi.
What's up, Asher?
I'm the Marcus.
I thought he said Marcus.
Can you say hi, Sam and Andy?
Hi, Sam and Andy.
Oh.
Can you say hi, Light Years?
Hi, Light Years.
Okay, buddy. I'll join you in a few minutes. Okay.
Baby genius. I guess.
It's awesome.
Okay.
Oh man.
Okay, I should probably be wrapping up, guys.
Yeah.
I think
we'll get him out of here now.
Let's just complete that thought. So you think win while developing, it starts from the Lakers, right?
I think so. Which, maybe that could be praised to a certain extent, not wanting to do the process thing, wanting to remain competitive, wanting to do what Daryl Morey did for so many years of just always putting out a quality product, last season accepted. Maybe that's the way to go, but they are stuck on two different timelines. It's almost like they're trying to ski downhill with two different size skis, and it is a bit tricky.
I'd actually be Team Lake up here. You're gonna convert me. I've been slowly turning over a little bit to the Lake Ups because they seem to care more about winning. So
There you go.
All right, we'll end it here. Ethan, thank you so much for joining us.
Fun as always, guys. Anytime. Take care.